It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Wednesday, July 30th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. In the eyes of investors next to Facebook, Twitter's little bird has had some growing to do. That was the narrative last quarter, at least. But the latest numbers from the company are good. Revenue was up over last year to 312 million. User growth numbers up too. Here's Forrester's Nate Elliott.
What we saw was 6% more monthly active users this quarter than they did last quarter. So that's not great, but at least a little bit of new growth is pretty encouraging.
Encouraging enough to have Twitter stock way up in after-hours trading yesterday. Elliott says the real challenge for Twitter is to keep finding new users. Big tech players like Google, Airbnb, and Uber are trying to get into the lobbying game. So is the video game industry. More and more game makers are concerned about the government's sway over issues like online privacy and net neutrality. And they have a bit of a secret weapon when they're trying to level up in Washington's lobbying world. Millions of gamers. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has this report.
How do we best tell this to policymakers?
We're in a strategy meeting in Washington's trendy Chinatown, listening to the voice of video game makers in Washington, Eric Huey, Donkey Kong champion, Madden addict, and now chief lobbyist for the Entertainment Software Association, the main trade group for the gaming business in Washington.
I feel like Mario, the fix-it man, the plumber, making sure that the things flow correctly. But I think more often than not, I feel like Sonic the Hedgehog running around with frenetic energy.
All right, rock and roll.
Huey and his staff have just finished discussing a plan to highlight gaming industry jobs in congressional districts. Now Huey is off to the corridors of Capitol Hill, first to visit Congressman Joe Garcia, a Democrat from Florida.
How are you, Congressman?
All right, we're good. Good to see you.
Thanks. Doing all right?
Doing
all
right.
Appreciate you taking the time.
You can.
Members of Congress listen to Huey. The Center for Responsive Politics says the Entertainment Software Association spent almost $5.5 million on lobbying in 2013.
That's pretty serious lobbying money.
Vivica Novak is the center's spokeswoman. Scrolling through spending reports, Novak says there was a spike in the video game lobby spending as Congress considered a bill mandating research into whether violent video games cause actual violence.
So almost half of their reports in 2013 mentioned the Violent Content Research Act. It's clearly something they were very concerned about.
The bill is now stalled in the Senate. The video game industry has lobbied on online piracy and privacy, too. And they're not just relying on shoe leather. They're trying to get gamers to help make their case online, but it's not easy, according to Andrew Roche, the founder of Personal Democracy Media and chairman of an annual conference on politics and technology.
Yeah, it's a little bit like herding cats with a dog in the room.
Gamers don't always support the tech lobby's positions. Still, Eric Huey says his association has organized about 600,000 gamers into a group called the Video Game Voters Network. When a congressman recently made disparaging remarks about gaming, Huey says thousands of the video voters responded.
4,000 constituents calling in. That's quite powerful.
Huey says when it works, the Video Game Voters Network can be a potent weapon, an advantage over other lobbyists who don't have such an active online base that's used to combat, at least in video games. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Heard about Project Loon, right? Google's plan to wrap the whole world in internet access using fancy balloons. Well, here's a different idea. Just deliver the internet's information to the planet using large satellites and simple radio waves. It might help deliver data to people who don't have regular access, and it might be about to happen, or at least start to happen. Syed Karim is the founder of a project called OuterNet. Syed, thanks for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
How does this thing work, at least in theory?
What Outernet does differently, instead of providing direct internet access to everyone, is we're providing the content that exists on the internet. And the way that we're doing it is we're using satellites, and we're broadcasting that data to anyone with a receiver, and then they go ahead and take those signals and turn them into files, which can be viewed in a browser.
So basically what happens is you're uploading the entire internet to a web of satellites that then broadcasts that data back down to the planet, which people can pick up pretty easily with a receiver and download onto a computer or device.
Yeah, you've hit it exactly. Think of it like FM radio, except instead of sending audio, it's just really sending, you know, all the different files that are necessary to build a website.
What's your status? Where are you at?
We'll be actually live within a few weeks, and we can do that very quickly by using existing direct video broadcasting satellites. Those are those giant bus-sized satellites that already exist in geostationary orbit. So essentially what we're hoping to do is, you know, very initially offer Wikipedia, basically broadcasting it to the whole world.
If I go look at a Wikipedia page using the Outernet and someone is editing that page, how long is it going to take to see the newly edited section of the Wikipedia page?
As it stands, we'll only be updating, let's say, Wikipedia archives on a weekly or a biweekly basis. But as our bandwidth increases, we can say, hey, every time this page there's a change, we'll just go ahead and rebroadcast it, and that gets, you know, saved locally to whoever's listening to it.
You've had a lot of support online, or at least interest, it seems like. I've seen the Outernet website high on Reddit's front page, and I've seen some buzz about it. How has the interest in the organization impacted your guys' ability to get off the ground, I guess, literally here?
So I would say because there is so much interest, and it's great that there is interest, it also slows us down a bit because we have to be really product-focused in order to be able to get solve the technical problems and get things out the door.
It's no longer just an idea exercise. It's actually something that people are behind, and you then have to sort of put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, so there's a lot of complexity involved, and so it's great that there's been so much outreach and so much interest, but I really feel bad, actually, because we haven't been able to really respond properly to all the enthusiasm around it.
Syed Karim is the founder of Outernet. Syed, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you want to find out more about the Outernet, just go on the internet and find us, marketplacetech.org. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.